Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host
Niñas Bien Podcast. We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Welcome to Wood Talk. Now here are three guys who can never resist a good butt joint joke. Mark, Shannon, and Matt.
Welcome to Wood Talk. It's show number 515. On today's show, we're talking about dimensioning lumber, a stupid question about pre-finishing, and flattening boards wider than your jointer. But before we get to that, we want to let you know that Wood Talk is brought to you by Rockler. Try not to laugh.
Rockler's well, I didn't even, like, it's there, it's written. And I'm like, wait, there's no way it says a stupid question about, oh yeah, okay, it's there.
Yeah.
You read it.
We always bring up the stupid questions. It's when they say that it's a stupid question, that's when we say stupid question.
Wait, I thought you were ad-libbing there, but no, you're just reading right off the notes.
That's literally what's written there.
You may continue.
Well, Rockler has been helping customers create with confidence for over 65 years. Rockler is giving away a new product each month to one lucky Wood Talk listener. This month, they're giving away a Dust Right wall mount dust collector with unique wall mount design. This dust collector gobbles up all the dust at the source without hogging up floor space. This prize is valued at $399.99 of them cents. Enter for your chance to win before December 1st at rockler.com/woodtalk.
And if you want to help support the show, you can do so by going to patreon.com/woodtalk and signing up to become a patron of the show. This week, we're thanking no one. Because we don't have any new patrons.
Nobody knows. But
I'm gonna thank my buddy Donovan, who's been a longtime listener and longtime patron.
Really?
And he's here every day, and somehow he's putting up with me still.
Yeah.
So
give him a shout out. What's his Instagram?
Donovan's Holmes.
Let's send at least three people his way. A solid three.
If you want to see more pictures of my home construction, you can visit his Instagram too.
Yeah. Looks like a solid dude. Nice guy. Knows what the hell he's doing.
Very solid.
Yeah. Good. That's awesome.
He's always working in the background of your Instagram photos. So I imagine his Instagram is probably pretty sparse.
Someone has to do the work.
Someone's got to be doing
getting,
the work.
I've been getting those too. Like on my Instagram stories, people are like, you always just film all the people working, like you never show yourself. I'm like, you know how much work it is to make a story of you yourself working?
Diva.
Like I gotta like set a camera on a tripod and like film it and then go back and edit it on my phone and then post it as a story. No, I'm just gonna take a quick video of Donovan doing something. That's more easier.
That's just like framing a wall.
Yeah.
It's equivalent.
Yeah.
Equivalent level of work involved there. All right, well, let's get to it. Got to keep this as a little bit of a short show today. We're going to be blowing through this. So again, second show for our recording here, which means we're doing what's on the dining table. A little bit more of a, like a personal look at what's going on.
Yeah, I know at least one person said they liked that. They liked the whole thing.
Well, then that's how you know it's a raving, raging success.
Right.
Hopefully that one person will also go see Donovan's Instagram too. Yeah. Let's get double duty while we're here. So what's on my dining table? Well, I fired my wife. So there's that.
Nice.
Look, one too many times, she's back-sassing me.
You fired her, you know, as your wife, or you fired her as an employee?
Employee.
I was going to say, that's called divorce.
Yeah, I was going to say, it has another name.
Much more expensive.
Yeah, so we explained all this on our live show that we do. The last live show that we did was actually our last live show together for now. We might still, you know, pop up and do like a holiday special and stuff like that. But it's been a long time coming, and I don't know how much I want to get into this, especially on a short show. But it was a realization that her leaving her original career probably would have been more of a problem sooner if we hadn't had kids. So like, having kids really disguised some of the issues that she had with taking on this new career path, which was basically helping me run this business. And, you know, for an accomplished woman who had a very well respected position in a company, that she got a lot of gratification out of the challenge and the rewards of that position, is now working for, you know, not working for me. She's working with me on this business, but really it's my thing, right? Like, the whole woodworking thing is my thing, and she's helping me. And I think what happened is she had this kind of like, she needed this anchor, and unfortunately it wasn't coming from the wood whisperer side of things. So as the kids got older and now out here in Colorado, she started to volunteer and at school, and she started to find like, this is really what she wanted to do. And she was putting all of her time into volunteering, and it was causing this little bit of a problem because she's supposed to be working for me. Well, thankfully,
if I remember right, wasn't she in training before, like technical training?
Oh yeah. Well, she worked for a software company, and her job was as part of the sales team, the person who would do technical training and also sales, like seminars to try to sell these universities on the software that they
produce. So she's kind of already got the teaching thing in her background.
Oh, totally.
Sorry. Yeah. Spoiler alert. I'm spoiling the end of the story here.
No, that's fine. So she's been doing all this volunteer stuff at the school, doing bringing in technical programs with 3D printers for the kids, and doing a lot of stuff that like no one there is willing to do or knowledgeable enough to do. And it's been great, but it's also been taking her away from the thing I need her to do. So this was creating quite a bit of conflict for us. And we kind of both like sat back, and I looked at the situation, and I kind of realized what had happened here. This would have come to a head a lot sooner if we didn't have kids, because when kids come, you go, why am I unhappy? Oh, that's right, I have kids. Why am I stressed out right now? Oh, that's right, I've got kids. And the thing is, the kids are getting older. And as they get older, we have more time to get things done. And it's like, you can't just blame the kids all the time. You have to really look at like, what's missing here? What's wrong with this situation? And I think it really comes down to, some people are just really not built for self-employment, right? Like, some people actually thrive in a structured environment where they actually have to, you know, make a boss happy. They have responsibilities, people expecting them to be places. I don't think everybody's built for that. And I think the fact that now the things are slowing down with the kids, in terms of like, they're in school all day, we've got nothing but time. She started to fill her schedule with things that are gratifying work for her, even though it was unpaying work. So I told him, like, look, I just think this is like when you gave me permission to leave biotech to pursue what I wanted to do with woodworking. I'm telling you now that we will figure this out. You go do what you want to do. It doesn't matter how much it pays. You want to be a substitute teacher, get your license. You want to go back to school to actually, you know, be a full-time teacher. If that's what you want to do, do it. So she did. And now she started working this week at the school.
She called your bluff.
Dope. She called my bluff. And now I'm like, holy, what did I just do? So yeah. So long story short, well, long story longer than I intended it to be. She is now working with the school, and we have to make some changes, here at home and in the business to accommodate that happening. But it's all good, and it's a positive thing that it's happening, but it's opening up some opportunities for me to do things with our Patreon and YouTube member programs and things that, because it needs to change now, because it's not all about the morning show anymore. So yeah, good stuff coming from there.
Well, that's cool.
That's cool.
My mom did that. She became a substitute, you know, once we were old enough and she didn't need to watch us every step of the way. And it was incredibly fulfilling for her. I mean, she eventually ended up in real estate, but she spent, I think, 15 years as a substitute teacher. Truly loved it.
Awesome.
It's very cool. So good for her.
For the right person, it's great. You know, it's and she's getting a lot of gratification out of it. So I just want to see her happy. So here we go.
That's it.
made a little bit of a detour, and now
I guess
off.
We're doing this.
This is what we're doing. So Matt, I don't know if you have anything new. The house is like dominating everything for you.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. It's been an overall like good experience. I'm actually really, speaking of like doing things that you actually enjoy, mm-hmm. you figure that out. I'm like, oh, I haven't been at my desk like at all.
Yeah.
For like 3 weeks. And I love it.
So you're going to start working for Donovan now?
Well, I don't know about that, but
let's not take it that far. Okay.
Let's not go that far. I mean, I'm out there sweat equitying it up here.
Yeah.
Just every day is different. And like, I've kind of done this interesting reflection. Where I'm like, I grew up in this generation where like college is like the only pathway
yeah.
that you could even consider. I'm like, you know, I don't think they definitely sold the trade short, because this is like, I'm actually enjoying this.
Mm-hmm.
I presumably it pays well. I don't know. It sounds like it would otherwise, but it's fun. It's something different. You're solving problems, getting things done. And at the end of the day, you're like, I did something today. I feel accomplished. Most days you feel like you accomplished something.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I don't know. It beats the pants off sitting at a desk all day.
Do you think this changes though, when you're working for a client? And not yourself.
I have no idea.
I mean, you're the customer.
I don't know. I'm in disillusioned land over here. Yeah. So I have no idea.
Can some construction people write us in and give a cold glass of water to Matt?
I was going to say, I got a whole bunch of clients
what it's really like
who are
to
raising
be
their hands right now. They're ready to write Matt right now.
This would be like me going like, you know, I just want to be a furniture maker for a living. This is so fun. I get to be on Instagram every time I take a duty. And
I don't know, man. I'm doing like apprentice work. Literally the things I do, I'm like, go get whatever out of the trailer.
Sure.
Go get me whatever tool. And I enjoy it because my job is essentially anticipating need. Just thinking about like, what's he going to need next?
What kind of coffee does he like? What's he prefer?
Well, the other thing is he is just like me and he will lose that coffee repeatedly throughout the day.
Where's the damn
coffee? One of my main tasks is to keep track of his coffee mug because he will lose it.
You know, they make those Apple tags that are pretty cheap.
He's got those for a few of his other things.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to get some more of those.
Put them on the coffee mugs, man. That's great.
That's awesome. Cool.
So what, I mean, do you think this is going to inform future decisions about things that you do or directions you go with content or something?
So kind of. So about maybe a month ago, I brought on a part-time editor and camera person guy. Mm-hmm. His name is Brad, and he's out of state right now, but we're doing some like, I guess, trial period things where he comes to town for a few days and takes care of the cameras. Mm-hmm. And I've been living that. I kind of live that experience. He's done that twice now. And it's really nice to not have to really worry about the camera stuff. And then the stuff that he is taking all the way through the post-production too. Like all I have to do is be in the moment, be on camera, working on whatever. And then I don't have to really worry about post-production until there's a finished video.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of keeps me off the computer.
Can I tell you that like when Todd, stuff. I was literally depressed when Todd left because I'm just like, this was so convenient, right? Like to get the job done, be in the shop. I don't have to worry about copying footage and all that other stuff. Having someone take care of that that's a big deal, man.
I find myself a little more productive too in the moment. Cause I'm like, well, so for two things in the moment, I'm more productive. So I'm only thinking about what I'm doing. I'm not thinking about what the camera's doing.
Yep.
To some extent, sometimes I'm like, Brad, this is a better angle, go over here. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I'm like, I'm just doing whatever I'm doing. But at the same time, it's almost like there's someone else here. I can't just go on my phone and mess around on Instagram for 3 hours.
Some accountability going on.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, I gotta stay on task here. So things like get done and I don't get distracted as easily, which it's been an interesting dynamic. So I'm going to see how that kind of plays out.
Nice.
That's cool.
I'm excited for you. So does he doesn't live close?
He's in Nebraska.
How far is that for you?
6 hours?
That's not close.
No.
So generally, we're doing this thing where he comes for 3 days and that kind of that 3 days of pay kind of covers the travel.
It's a bit of a long distance relationship then.
It is, but we're looking at potentially making it not long distance.
Taking it more seriously.
It's a fun courting period. I don't know. It's
yeah.
It's kind of interesting. He sent me an email, and he's he did like commercial production, whatever you want to call it, like professional commercial videography, something, whatever. So he's like a real, the real deal.
Yeah.
Like,
look at so him.
It's also kind of interesting too, because his background is more like fully scripted, like rehearsed and everything. Yeah, like
not this casual the
camera,
BS.
The camera moves are rehearsed. You know, he knows what the talent's going to say, where the camera needs to be, what the shot's going to be, what all the settings on the camera are going to be before the take actually happens. Whereas now I'm like, I'm dumping him in this thing. He's like, just follow along, make it work.
You just be like, look, on your worst day, you'll do it better than I could do it, is what it comes down to. That's how I feel when there's a professional in the room.
He's definitely professional. I'm like, this is such a unprofessional workplace for you compared to what you're used to.
Yeah.
Like it's such a day and night thing.
But you know what? One thing I've heard from Todd is that it's more gratifying because you actually get to see the results of your work and you get to see people enjoy your work. And then you are hopefully working with a person who can pass you compliments once in a while and be like, oh my God, this was a great edit. Nicely done. I think it could be very gratifying for him.
I've definitely done that already. He's edited one video, I think. And it was like, I gave him the footage and it came back as, oh, this is actually pretty damn close.
Yeah.
And really good. I'm actually looking forward to seeing an edit of something he shot.
Yeah.
Because the camera's actually moving the whole time.
You probably don't get that kind of feedback from a toothpaste commercial. Man, that was just awesome.
Yeah. You could totally see the teeth.
You can see the teeth.
Look at those teeth. God. That's cool. Well, hey, Shannon, your thing reminds me, I got to pick up a kid's bike from the repair shop.
Oh, that can be there a while. I know my local bike shop.
It's done now, though. I got to go get it.
Taking forever. Yeah. I talked in the last time how I was toying with the idea of buying a actual triathlon bike. So instead, I went in a totally different direction. And I bought a gravel bike, basically a hybrid mountain bike with drop bars. But here's the thing, because this is the true irony, is in the woodworking side of things, I'm not really a fan of making tools. I don't really like restoring tools and things like that. But it seems like on the bike side of things, I kind of like that. So I bought I think it's a 2013. So it's almost a 10-year-old hardtail mountain bike. So in case you don't know, mountain bikes are like all full suspension now. This is before they had full suspension on the back. And I'm going to kind of Frankenstein it and add some parts. I've got some spare parts already in my own little bike shop, aka my laundry room. But I'm going to, you know, add a few things and kind of trick it out and turn it into like a full-blown bike packing bicycle, because that's where I think I kind of want to take all the fitness that I've gained. Certainly triathlon has been a lot of fun. I've got big triathlon goals for 2022, but the idea of having a bike that doesn't have a power meter on it, and I don't care whether it's aerodynamic or not, is very appealing at the same time. Like, you know, the love of going out for a bike ride, it's there to some extent when you're, you know, hammering intervals and things like that. But the ability to go backpacking with your bike or bike packing really is kind of a fun little Venn diagram for me of things I love doing. So long-term meaning probably in the next 2 years, is to actually do the Great Divide mountain bike route, which is the longest unpaved route, I think, in the world. It runs from Banff, Calgary, Alberta area, all the way down to Mexico, through Montana, Idaho, Wyoming, Colorado, New Mexico, across the border. And it just so something I want to do. So that's the idea that this, I'm going to take this bike, and just like woodworking, we'll probably spend 10 times more to build that coffee table than what I didn't want to pay for in the first place. Sure. So I've dropped $300 on a 10-year-old bike, and we'll probably end up paying, well, you know, probably could just go out and buy a $3,500, you know, brand new gravel bike and might end up cheaper by the time I'm done. I don't know. You never know. But it's the journey. This is the thing I'm kind of looking forward to. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm like, keep checking the tracker because it was supposed to show up tomorrow, but now it's not showing up till Tuesday. I'm like, dang it.
So you're all excited.
Oh, yeah. It's just so funny because I still plan to get a triathlon bike. I mean, I'm going to do a half Ironman next year. So I really want to get a dedicated tri bike for that. But that's going to be one of those things that I go and like count on Black Friday sales and things like that. Yeah. So it's like, yeah, I'm looking to buy a bike and kind of ended up clicking over. And it's like, ooh, bike packing. Ooh, I've always wanted to do that. And like went the totally opposite direction.
And that stuff is expensive too. Like my brother did triathlons for a while. Like once. And my gosh, the amount of money he spent on that bike that he wound up not using in the end.
My gosh. You can very easily spend five figures on a triathlon bike.
Yeah,
I don't quite want to go that far, but it's hard to do it, you know, certainly hard to do it for less than $3,000. Yikes. But then you start looking at like marginal things. So it's like, well, if I just added this, it's only $3,500. It's like, well, if you just add that, now you have to add this. Now it's $4,500. You're just like, yeah, it gets a little scary.
You need that digital readout and hike.
Yeah, you gotta have digital shifting now, man. It's the way of the future. I love how bike ads are. Well, this is what the pros ride. It's like, look at me. Do I look like a pro? First of all, I'm 46. So no.
Yes.
Yeah. Because the pros ride that.
I don't need what they have.
Yeah. And so if I have this, I'll ride as fast as Julian Alaphilippe. No, but you'll spend as much. Stuff. Yeah. Excellent. So yeah, that's me.
Well, cool. Well, you guys, you guys know who doesn't sell used bikes?
I don't know. They might now.
They might now. So after this episode,
wooden bikes are a big thing. Bamboo bikes are even bigger.
That's true. You never know. Maybe they will in the future. You never know. I'm talking about Rockler, of course. If you're ready to learn more about woodworking techniques, Rockler classes and demonstrations can be an exciting step in the right direction. Presented by members of Rockler's friendly and knowledgeable staff, the in-store sessions have something to offer woodworkers of all skill and experience levels. Topics range from wood turning to cabinet building to finishing to working with a CNC and much, much more. Visit rockler.com to find a store near you and sign up. And if you don't have access to a store, check out their website for educational resources, including videos, articles, and free step-by-step project plans. I'll tell you what, that CNC course, that sounds pretty nice. I wonder, like, one of the challenges with CNC is, like, it depends on which machine you're on and, like, what software package they use. I wonder how I know we were going to do a guild course, and that was something that was really challenging, was to narrow that down. I wonder how they handle that in the store. Yeah, I don't know.
Do they have like their own CNC that you would learn on there in store, maybe?
Well, that's what I mean.
So you learn whatever they have?
I'm guessing they just use, whatever they sell. But that's pretty sweet that they do that. Good stuff. Well, go ahead.
This is me being horribly uninformed, and I'm probably going to say the wrong thing because I'm the hand tool guy. Come on, give me some slack. But
that's what we expect.
Couldn't you spend like a lot of time just at a computer? Like, certainly working with the models and formatting into the right format, file type and everything, isn't it just a matter of then loading it into your CNC and hitting go?
There's loading it into the CNC, hitting go, and seeing what happens.
Okay.
Like there are times where, like, I guess, you know, when you're really experienced and skillful, you should have a good run. But I know for me, hitting go is like the first part of problem solving, because then I go,
there's like, you know, setting an origin point and setting your tool height. And
would that vary dramatically from one CNC to another? In other words, like, so if you were to do it and then hit go on the machine, the one machine they have in the Rockler store, what would your process? Would your process be that much different if, say, you bought a brand Y CNC for your own shop?
Some of them are operating on the same principles. The idea is, I think a course like this is probably designed to be like, you have to set your origin. You have to set your Z axis. Right. Sure. Now, here's how you do it on this machine. Your machine might be a little different. You've got different buttons to push, but to know that you need to do that, to understand feeds and speeds, to understand how the router bit, you know, should be traveling through the work, how the work is secured to the table. I mean, there's a lot of commonalities between these things, and I'm guessing that's the kind of stuff that they cover. But once you start getting into like different software packages, you could just spend a lifetime learning VCarve and how to manipulate that damn software program. But it's powerful stuff. Anyway, it's all good. Go check it out. And of course, more than just CNC, they've got all traditional woodworking elements there as well. So go to rockler.com, check that out. It's a great place to learn. But don't go there looking for bikes. Not going to find them. Okay. So I got a question here from Richard Rapant or Rapant. He says, possible stupid question, stain and finish prep. This is probably a stupid question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. I'm working on a lifting top coffee table that's made using mainly pocket holes, and I'm at the stain and finish prep stage. Do you ever take apart furniture for stain and finish? I'm going to take these questions one by one because I'm going to lose the thread if I don't. So do you ever take apart furniture for stain and finish? Well, I think this might be a question you ask when you use pocket screws, because once a piece of furniture is together, it's most of the time, in my case, not coming apart. Right?
That's a good point.
So,
yeah.
So this
at least
might
not
be
going back together once you take it apart.
Right. He says, do you remove drawers and doors and stain and finish the inside? So I generally do finish the inside, but I do not finish the inside to the same degree that I finish the outside. I do want stain in there if I'm staining the project, and I certainly want at least a coat of finish in there, but I'm probably not going to treat the interior the same as the exterior in terms of just getting the perfect finish. Just close enough and not real gross and rough to the feel. But what you're really talking about here is kind of the concept of pre-finishing. So now if you have the ability to take your projects apart and then apply finish, that's what a lot of us do. Sometimes you don't see it in video though, and I'm guilty of this myself, because it's kind of hard to tell the story of a project and talk about finishing before you talk about assembly. It just feels
in the middle of the thing.
Yeah.
Okay. We're finishing now.
Yeah. It really feels what? Out of place. But if you're,
I think if the name of it was different.
Yeah.
Like if, because finish, like it sounds like something you do at the end.
It's pre-assembly.
Like some other thing.
Yeah, like mid-roll.
Or finish.
Yeah. It is. But in real life, in a shop, a lot of times we are pre-finishing those parts. So we're taping off the things we don't want to get finish on. And we then apply our finish. It's great because all the pieces are easy to handle. You can get to all the flat surfaces without adjoining edges, making corners that you have to deal with. And then you do your assembly after that point. So if you have the ability to take your stuff apart after, you know, a dry assembly, yes, this is something that lots of people do. And I recommend you look into it, as long as it, you know, there are times where pre-finishing just doesn't quite pan out and it makes more sense to apply the finish after everything is done. But if you can, go ahead and do it. It just makes life a whole lot easier. He says, does this depend on the use case, such as indoor versus outdoor use? Is it overkill to do all of this? Do you just remove the hardware before stain and finish? So I don't think indoor and outdoor matters at all, to me at least. It's generally the structure itself, how it goes together, and whether finishing early is going to cause me a problem during assembly. Or kind of I look at the other way. If this is something with a whole bunch of slats, I immediately look at that and go, well, that's going to suck to finish afterwards. Maybe I should try to do that ahead of time.
That's the worst.
Anything with slats, you should be suspicious of, unless you're like finishing with HVLP, then you might see it a little differently.
Oh, still sounds terrible.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it does. Cause you got to sand between coats and blah, blah, blah. Is it overkill? Absolutely not. Like I said, a lot of us do this. And yeah, I do. The hardware is like the last thing, the very last thing that goes into a case, onto a drawer, onto a door. Hardware is generally staying away from the whole thing. And that's the icing on the cake. When the project is completely finished and I'm ready to call it done, hardware goes in, and then you don't have to worry about hardware and finish or stain kind of interfering with each other. So not a stupid question at all. I think it's a fundamental question. And I think it's difficult to nail this down if you watch a bunch of YouTube videos, because a lot of us do keep the finishing as the last thing because it seems like it's sensible to be the last thing. But yes. Talking about, you mentioned your buddy Donovan and his work methods, just having this like experience that knowing it makes sense to do this now, that's kind of what pre-finishing is in a lot of cases. It's that like, oh, I didn't realize we could do that. Boy, that makes this much, much easier.
Oh, that's an option?
I can do this?
Wait, you can do that?
Yeah.
Oh,
exactly.
Hey, I like that. Exactly.
All right. Who's next? I think we're coming up on your half hour here, Matt.
This is from Jeff. He says, is there a rule of thumb when purchasing rough lumber to mill to a particular thickness? If I want material for a project at a particular thickness, should I purchase rough lumber at twice that thickness or an added percentage? I'd like to save as much money and material as possible. Obviously, I think the rule of thumb is about a quarter an inch. If I'm trying to get a finished thickness of 1 inch, I buy 5/4 or 1 1/4 inch thickness. You can get away with a lot less than that, But, you know, if your board is particularly bowed or there's a lot of cup, I mean, a lot of it depends upon the actual dimensions of the finished piece. Is it a narrow piece, a long piece, et cetera? You know, you might have to remove more material. Also, if the board, the rough board is particularly warped, that may have to remove a little bit more. But I do think the rule of thumb is about a quarter of an inch. Definitely not twice the thickness.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot.
Yeah. That's a lot of wasted lumber. A lot of sawdust.
Cool.
All right. This one is from Lucas. I have a 6-inch jointer, which realistically gives me about a 5.5 inch.
Pronounce all of those letters, Matt. Get them all in there.
You know, Lucas typed them all in.
Add a few more sure while you're in there.
All those finger taps were represented here in my voice. Okay. It gives about a 5.5 inch capacity once the fence is in place. I often want to build projects that are larger. What would you recommend for dimensioning larger stock that won't fit on the jointer? Rip it to fit and glue it up, plane and joint it by hand. Router sled, curious to hear how you handle these large pieces. Well, if you're Shannon and you just joint and plane it by hand,
mm-hmm.
or you run it through a giant planer.
I have a CNC in the other room that I use.
That's true.
You went to Rocket to learn how to use it too.
Yeah. Don't tell anybody.
His certificate.
That's right.
It's hanging up.
The irony is the frame that I put it in, I build that by hand.
That's very ironic. I like that.
Yeah.
So for me personally, I have a 12-inch jointer and I still end up with boards that are too wide for it. And I'm a sucker for not wanting glue lines. So my last resort is to rip something down and glue it back up. So I will typically remove the guard of my jointer and make a wide rabbiting pass to establish a nice wide flat reference, and then put that on a little sled through the planer, flatten the other side, flip the board over, and then remove that little ledge, and then you got a flattened board. I like to call this one the hangover method, but I think there's a better name for it somewhere. But I like hangover better.
Hangover method.
Because you're like, hanging the board over the side of the jointer.
Like you got to be drunk to do it type of thing?
Or that. I mean, that's fine too, but...
If you joint your board and you end up with a face tattoo, that's the hangover method.
Jeez.
Nice.
And that takes me up to like the width of my planer, and then bigger than that goes to router sled. That's just me at least.
Okay. Have either of you guys ever done that where you rip it to fit and then glue it back together?
A long time ago before I cared about what my boards look like.
Yeah, I'm sure I must have just to make it work.
I never did. I looked at that and said, oh, hell no.
Yeah.
I've been a lazy woodworker from the earliest days.
It's a real punch in the gut, you know, because it's like you've got the width and you are cutting it down just so that you can glue it back together.
Right.
And I think that's one of the reasons why, like,
that glue up perfectly flat, you know, I mean, all the little extra steps you have to take. It's like, no, man. No.
Well, I think this is one of the reasons why, like, as much as it can hurt financially, like one of the first things that's like a luxury upgrade that you go, yes, this just feels right, is when you can get the wider jointer.
This feels right.
Like this was the right thing to do, you know, like no one regrets getting a big jointer.
Yeah. It was fantastic. Yeah.
Well, cool. Okay. I think we're done with the show.
I think so.
Matt, you can go do whatever it is you're supposed to be going to do.
Okay.
Okay, well, I guess that does it for us. So remember that we are proudly sponsored by Rockler, family-owned since 1954. Rockler is your go-to source for high-quality and innovative woodworking tools, finishing supplies, hardware, lumber, and expert advice. Whether you're building a simple bookshelf, a custom desk, or new kitchen cabinets, Rockler has everything you need to make your next project a success. Visit rockler.com for a store near you, or use the code WOODTALK, that's all one word, to receive free shipping on most orders over $39. And remember to head to rockler.com/woodtalk to enter for your chance to win that Dust Right wall mount dust collector. Whoa.
Yeah. I got me one of those.
You made it through.
I've had one of those for like 8 years, I think. Still going strong.
Yeah. Shannon is a proponent of that. I remember many shows ago, you bragging on how much you like that thing.
Yeah. It's good stuff. So anyway, for all those people that are like, have already started typing what an idiot I am about CNC and are just ready to just rant about all the things I don't know about CNC, go to woodtalkshow.com and you can copy and paste it into the comment form or whatever there, or just email that to woodtalkshow@gmail.com. I will be happily reading what an idiot I am about CNCs on the next show. So
with joy, I will read it.
Yeah, one of those emails will be from me.
So. Yeah, I can already tell you that I agree with whatever it is you're about to say, whatever it is you've already typed
accurate
and sent to us. I agree with it. So here's your chance. So thank you for those questions, folks. Keep sending them in. And thank you to Margaret. She's doing a kick butt job as our social media coordinator, trying to keep it PG.
Yeah, I don't know. Keep it clean.
Yeah. And then, of course, Nick Key of Keyboard Works. He's doing a great job editing all of my heavy breathing, which hopefully we're not going to have this time. So
let's all give everybody a dose of that.
This is going to be our highest rated episode.
It's an ASMR episode, actually.
Nice. I'm going to talk that. ASMR.
That's good stuff. Hey, you guys know what I did? I said, hey, Margaret, you're so good at this. Can you do my guild Instagram account that we just started? She said, sure thing. And now she's helping me out with that.
Wow.
Pretty great, right?
Wow.
Keeping her busy.
Well, she's all good right. People. Keep the good people employed.
That's right. I wouldn't go that far. I mean, we give her a few bucks. Employed is a little unfair.
Yeah. No, there's no W-9 involved anywhere.
Yeah, there's no W-9s involved in this process at all. All right. Well, thank you for listening, everybody, and we will catch you next time.
Love you. Bye.
See ya.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a hacer tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.